Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to be
sure. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse O'Poyan.
Welcome to Rewind, a look at this week in the Capitol from WisPolitics.com and Wisconsin Eye. First, we have Wis I Was There. That includes a news conference on the Missing in Action Recovery Identification Project. Also, lawmakers calling for honoring 9/11 victims and designating a 9/11 memorial highway. Testimony from various committees in the Capitol and the Speaker's Task Force on Suicide Prevention. Wis I Was There.
Today, we are announcing the introduction of legislation to support the wonderful work of the University of Wisconsin Missing in Action Recovery and Identification Project. This legislation provides $180,000 per year to help the UW-MIA-RIP identify the missing Wisconsin veterans and bring closure to those Wisconsin families.
It is my great honor to introduce a bill which will designate a portion of State Highway 28 as the Wisconsin 9/11 Memorial Highway.
I was a mailman for 27 years on a walking route. My passion is to send packages to deployed troops. You can get this out of committee, and you can get some money back to me so I can support that Marine. You're making the statement that you also support that Marine.
Within Wisconsin, there's currently 158,000 households who are renting their homes, who earn less than half of the median income, and pay more than half of that income in rent.
A lot of times W-2s are given at the beginning of the year, and that might be something that's accessible. Working out in the field, it's unbelievable, and this is including marriage licenses. How many people do not have something with a current address on, and we on election day as election officials are just trying to help people vote.
If there's going to be something that's going to make somebody feel better and ease through a transition of treatment onto something else, and it's medical marijuana, who am I to say no? If this got to the floor, it would pass. It would pass with Democrats and Republicans voting for it.
Every single major medical organization says don't do this. So why me as a politician would think I'm smarter than the researchers, smarter than the doctors, smarter than the scientists? And I think some people will have second thoughts when they actually have to make that vote.
Across the state, from every single place we've come to and every single area that we've heard from, guns do play a role in suicide in Wisconsin.
Now, I know some people, once again, mention guns. That's not it. That's a means. That's not the why. When we talk about legislation moving forward, I want to get to the root cause.
So, Jesse, I guess I want to start with playing as a candidate's turn. So we've got two congressional seats right now we're watching very close. Start the 7th, because we actually have somebody who's in officially. Tom Tiffany, state senator from Minocqua now, announced that he is running. Those who bowed out this week include Jerry Petrosky, state senator from Marathon, Luke Hilgeman, sort of activist, state rep Romaine Quinn from Barron. We also have two others who are looking, three others who are looking, actually. Jason Church, who is a double amputee, Army vet, aide to U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, Fernando Fritz Riveron, who's a thoracic surgeon in Wausau, and now we have Menominee Mayor Brent Jacobson, who late this week said he was going to take a look at it. I guess we'll start with Tom Tiffany. What do you think he brings to the table in a correctional bid?
You know, he's obviously got the familiarity. He's been around. I think he's a pretty familiar face to the district. But he's also really been positioning himself over the last few months, if not the last year or so, as a Trump ally. He's penned a couple op-eds talking about the USMCA deal. He's definitely putting himself out there as someone who will be a source in Wisconsin and in D.C. to help further the Trump administration's policies. And, you know, that will play differently in different parts of the state, but in his district, that's an asset.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely came as a Trump ally when he announced. The other thing I've kind of heard is that he has been preparing for Sean Duffy to leave for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
I think he assumed, though, that Sean Duffy would leave to run for their office. I mean, Duffy's been talked about for 2022 for some time. So this is kind of like moving up his timetable. I mean, he also, I guess, was preparing for 2018 in case Duffy ran for U.S. Senate. So he's been doing the legwork. I've heard that Tiffany's been going across that district, not just in the 12th Senate district, to do events. So he's kind of like lined up institutional support, lawmakers endorsing him. He had his first announcement at like Rob Swearingen's supper club
yep.
in Rhinelander. So yep. he's going to have surrogates, which is important because that district is so expansive. It runs from the St. Croix River to the east past Wausau Rhinelander. So there's no dominant media market, no dominant population center. So having surrogates helps, which is also a challenge for people like Jason and Fernando Riveron that they have both compelling stories, people told me, but how do they get that message out? They got to raise money, or Dr. Riveron, does he have the financial resources himself to fund the campaign? Jason Church, can he have a viral moment a la Randy Bryce video that goes out there, tells his story, and builds a fundraising network? And then Brent Jacobson talked to us this week about how he thinks D.C. needs a local official, but how do small-town mayors raise a lot of money for a congressional bid? So I know those things that I'm kind of watching in that district. Now we have the 5th Congressional District. Again, more people saying they're out than in at this point. So this week, the one saying out, Leah Vukmir, former state senator, U.S. Senate candidate 2018, Dale Koyenga, state senator from Brookfield, Waukesha County Exec Paul Farrow. I got a source on that, Chris Cappinga, Republican from Delafield, state senator, is going to get in. And there are all kinds of other names floating out there. I guess we'll start with Vukmir. Were you surprised that she did not run for this seat?
I was a little bit surprised. For a second, I thought we were going to have that same dynamic that we had before the U.S. Senate race in 18, where it was Vukmir, Scott Fitzgerald thinking about it, Kevin Nicholson. I mean, all those names kind of kept getting bandied about again, and I thought, was this going to be a repeat of 2018? I was a little surprised when she got out, but you know, it sounds like she's probably still finding her footing post-2018, and that definitely, I think, opens the field up a little bit for her getting out, and certainly clears things up for Scott Fitzgerald a little bit.
Yeah, well, her advantage seemed to be that she's from the voter-rich part of the district, right? Waukesha,
right.
That county, whereas Fitzgerald is not. She kind of ran an okay campaign, not great for U.S. Senate. People thought voters might hold that against her. But what I know in her statement was she said the personal freedom. I work in the National Taxpayers Union.
Yep.
She's enjoying that, which people like to always say that means she likes the paycheck and likes not being the fishbowl anymore of politics.
Sure.
Because when you're on the campaign trail, you have somebody with a camera tracking you all the time. And it's kind of, you know, a little bit overwhelming, so she's away from that. Koyenga, you know, I never had the feeling he really wanted to run for this.
I mean, his whole thing is the citizen legislator soldier thing. It really is stressing this being at home versus going out to D.C. Yeah.
And he does also, by not running, he avoids the possibility for Republicans of maybe a special election in a suburban Republican seat, which they've not been very good for Republicans lately, so that takes that off the table. Farrell, I wasn't surprised about because I've always felt like he wanted more run for a governor in 2022.
Yeah,
so
and that's still wide open. Yeah.
So now Fitzgerald, I think, is going to get in. That's the feeling I'm getting from people. We'd be remiss not to mention Matt Walker.
Right.
Matt Newman.
The primary of the Mets.
Adam Dalen. So
Ben
this
Volkel.
Could be Ben Volkel. Thank you. Interesting. Both the Mets and Ben, young guys, but very different paths here. Matt Walker has this dad's connections. Matt Newman also has a dad thing, right? Because his dad, Mark Newman, was in Congress, ran for governor. And then Ben Volkel is an aide to Ron Johnson. Matt and Matt have various paths to money. I'm not sure what Ben's is just yet because it's hard to run for being an aide to a U.S. senator to, you know, a congressional campaign. But what do you see with those guys?
I think that's, you know, the youth dynamic is interesting, and Adam Nealon would sort of fall into that, too.
Yes,
I mean, he's a younger guy and has the background of being in office for a little while, but is also a small business owner, so he's got that perspective, too. You know, something that I think we've seen from the Matt Walker rollout so far has been a really heavy hand from his father, who, again, really strong fundraising network, a lot of connections, but lost his most recent reelection, and I think is still going to go back to finding his footing after that election. Where does he stand in the state, and does that help his son or hurt him? Eventually, you're going to want to hear more from Matt Walker, not Scott Walker. But do voters want to see a Walker-Newman primary again? I don't know. But I think we're hearing that argument that the youth are being represented more by AOC and sort of the really far left, the socialist leaning wing of the Democratic Party, and maybe this is a counterweight to that. We'll see.
Well, it's the generational change thing, I think, the argument they're trying to make. What's also fascinating to me about all these things are the way the chess pieces move. So you take Leah off the board, Matt Walker, people tell me, and, well, the Walkers and Leah run in similar political circles. So, I mean, Scott Walker, was in the assembly. Leah won his assembly seat that he abandoned DeLuca run for, or left after he became county executive. So there are all these connections. So her being out maybe opens some more paths for Matt Walker. Mm-hmm. Things like that to watch, like who kind of is impacted. So if Fitzgerald gets in, what does an Adam Nalin do? Because Fitzgerald, it's a free shot for him. He's not up again until, in theory, until 2022 right. for the Senate seat, whereas Adam Nalin would have to give up his assembly seat to run. So all these pieces kind of keep moving. But the expectation I'm hearing is that Fitzgerald gets in soon, and then the field starts to coalesce. You know, what are these guys going to do? And what's their lane? Everybody has to have a lane in politics, right?
Yep.
What's their lane going to be? And with the Matts and the Ben, how do they stack up on a debate stage with Scott Fitzgerald, who was there for the and Chris Capia,
sure,
there
yeah.
for the arguments
yep.
over things like Act 10, Scott Fitzgerald pushed right to work. You know, that's going to be fascinating to watch how they can make the argument, if they get in, of youth versus experience. How does that play out?
I think the geographic element of the district is interesting, too. I mean, Kapinga, Walker, Newman, Volkel, Nalin, all of them are from the sort of the WOW area of the district, and Fitzgerald is from completely other end of the district, a much more rural part of the district. The Juneau County, Waupun kind of part of the district is something that you don't really think of, I think, as much in that district. And what does that do?
Oh, key for Fitz is going to be how much time did he spend going to Waukesha County GOP mm-hmm. events the last, you know, decade or so?
Right.
Because they've all been wondering when Jim Sutter was going to retire.
Yeah.
So, it has not been a secret that Scott Fitzgerald has wanted to run for this seat.
And it's not like he's an unknown name to Republicans in suburban Milwaukee yeah. area.
So that will be a developing story that we're talking about for a long time. Another one that I keep following is this whole thing about the conflict between the Joint Finance Committee and AG Josh Call about how to review settlements. I don't know about you, but I've covered the Capitol for a long time, and I've said more in the last decade, I've never seen this before than I had previously.
Yeah.
But I've never seen this before. Yeah. You have now a power for Republicans to review settlements reached by the Department of Justice. But how to review them has become a problem. And now we have the first time a real example, a real big-time case that's going before us, the Purdue Pharma settlement. So Josh Call has said it's not sufficient. I guess for background, Call's predecessor, Brad Schimmel, did not get into this whole argument or this lawsuit against Purdue Pharma. Call filed his own lawsuit in state court. Now there's apparently a settlement supposedly worth up to $12 billion, though Call's kind of question if it's really worth that. But Call saying it's not good enough. Even if it were, Jesse, how does he get it done with joint finance?
The path seems pretty murky at this point, right? I mean, the news cycle for that that hearing when there was all these questions about confidentiality agreements or non-disclosure agreements and getting approval, it was so confusing. I can't imagine anyone following it who wasn't there in the Capitol had probably cared but also had any idea what was going on. But now, I mean, you can see sort of the real impact of that. And the heart of it, I think, is this lack of trust between the two parties. You know, Call wants the NDAs. He wants the legislators to work with him on approving these settlements. Legislators are saying, why do we need to sign this? Especially if it's going to become public in the press a few weeks later. What's the point in that and us giving you that trust? And they keep just hitting this impasse that is really, I think, the prime illustration of what has come from that lame duck legislation and that lack of trust that resulted from it, but also just this really inability for government to function in some really key ways.
Oh, absolutely. Now, what I'm watching is how do they go up, forge a path forward? I mean, this is a true process story. Like, if you're at home, I don't blame you if your eyes are glazing over right now. However, we now know there could be millions of dollars at stake for the state of Wisconsin if they can't figure something out. That you bring up trust. And I think that's a very important word in this dynamic because in the law that the Republicans passed in December, there was not clearly laid out the process of how lawmakers would review settlements. Yes, they said that from now on, these committees can have review of these settlements. They didn't say how.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to build a relationship, build a process between a Democratic AG, Republican co-chairs of the Finance Committee, in which they don't trust each other, build a process to get this thing done. And I don't know how they do it so far. Now, the moves by Republicans and the Budget Committee are they've hired an outside attorney at $290 an hour to review things. They say that should satisfy Call's concerns. Call says it does not. So we're still at this impasse. What I want to know is if and when Josh Call reaches out with Purdue Pharma that he finds satisfactory, then what does JFC do?
Yeah, and that was, it seemed like they were potentially at that point when they had that last hearing. And he said, you know, this is an emergency situation. There's millions of dollars on the line. We need to reach resolution quickly. Turns out, you know, it didn't end up being the case. But this, I think, the fact that it didn't turn out to be a settlement that he wanted to reach may even hurt that argument in the future when he comes back and says, no, this is really an emergency. No, we really have to do it now. And lawmakers say, well, it wasn't the last time.
Oh, and it plays into Republicans don't trust Call. And I heard kind of a couple of arguments this week. One is that if Call wanted to make this work, he could. Another one is that, look, no AG, I don't care what party he or she is from, wants to have somebody else over his or her shoulder on every single case. What's more, there are hundreds of lawsuits that go through and settlements go through the DOJ every year. I don't think lawmakers want to know every single detail of every single one of them, but it's these big things. But yeah. These big things complicate the small things, and it just goes round and round and round. So moving on from that, a little more spicy topic. So we are going to be tipping point in the presidential election. We keep hearing it over and over and over again. This week, we hosted a luncheon with the two state party chairs, Andrew Hitt, Republican Party, Wisconsin, Ben Wickler from the Democratic Party, Wisconsin. Let's hear some a clip from that luncheon talking about how important we're going to be in the presidential election next year.
As we look at the current map, probably everybody knows this, he's got to win Pennsylvania, Michigan, or Wisconsin. Let's say Biden is the nominee. I think that takes Pennsylvania and makes that a challenge. We look at comparing Michigan to Wisconsin. I think we have some things to our advantage. Actually, the 5th and 7th being competitive, energetic races, those are Republican strongholds for us. I think that's going to be helpful for us in turnout. It's absolutely going to come down to Wisconsin.
I agree. If you line up the states where Trump is more popular than he is in Wisconsin, it does not add up to an electoral college majority. And if you line up all the states where he's less popular than he is in Wisconsin, it's also not an electoral college majority. Wisconsin is the tipping point state in the electoral college. Essentially, whoever wins in Wisconsin will become president. And I think it'll probably be someone who's not currently president.
Wrong.
So explain this to me. If we're such a tipping point, if we're such like the state, why is Biden up by 9 points on President Trump in the last Marquette poll?
Well, that's a good question. How many people are paying attention at this point? I think that answer is part of it. Biden's still the most well-known candidate in the Democratic field, aside from maybe Bernie Sanders in Wisconsin, since he did win the primary in 2016. But he's also doing pretty well in the polls. I think, you know, as much as we are a tipping point, we will be. We're not there yet, and people aren't paying attention yet. That's probably a big part of it.
Probably true in the primary, too. I didn't watch the debate last night. I had other things to do with work.
You didn't spend 3 hours in front of your TV?
I had work to do. Mm. But it's interesting to watch, like, the reaction to the performances and people saying, well, Biden's winning by default because he's the most well-known,
sure.
Where Warren's more organized, or Sanders has got this argument, or Senator Harris, on down the line. It will be fascinating to watch once people, like, really tune in how things move. But I guess, regardless of the poll numbers, the sign to me that we're important Trump campaign had Kimberly Guilfoyle here at UM Madison campus Thursday night, mm-hmm. trying to rally the troops. Robin Vining, state rep from the Tulsa area, the Roundtable of Moms on Wednesday. They're playing into these are the groups of people that we need. Republicans need their base to be active. They need those folks who turned for Trump in 2016 to be engaged. Dems need the suburbs to kind of turn out for them after being Republican for a long time because we're not doing well in rural areas. These are the messages that are going to be reinforced over and over and over again ad nauseum until next November.
Yeah.
Now, moving on to what's happening now, quick update on Governor Evers' cabinet. Mm-hmm. We had two committee votes this week. Caleb Frostman, Workforce Development, Sarah Meany at Tourism, both cleared Committee 5-0. Jesse, every member of Evers' cabinet who's got a committee vote so far has been 5-0, 4-1, 9-0, I think, on one of them. Why has nobody made the floor of the Senate yet?
What's the point? They can keep doing their job. There's really no incentive for Senate Republicans to put them on the floor, right?
So that's a good point. We do have three members left who have not had committee votes. We have Insurance Commissioner Marga Fable, Natural Resources Secretary Preston Cole, Professional Services Secretary Dawn Krim. Now, Cole and Krim have both had public hearings. Fable gets his next week. So my impression has been that Republicans in the Senate are going to meet sometime the next few weeks, figure out the fall floor period, and say, okay, of all these cabinet picks, who do we want to approve? Mm-hmm. I think there are a couple are problematic, not because they wouldn't pass it on the floor of the Senate, because you have 14 Dem votes automatically, but because there might be four or five Republicans who don't want to vote for him, and Fitz is not going to put a nomination on the floor without 17 GOP votes to pass that nomination.
That's right.
The question is, who gets those 17 GOP votes? Preston Cole is a fascinating one.
Yep.
Tom Tiffany, mentioned earlier running for Congress. Mm-hmm. He's the chair of the Porting Heritage Committee that heard Cole's nomination. So he thinks he's qualified. He has concerns about basically Evers people running DNR. Well, that's kind of what happens when you win the governor's office, right? But his
really
point
that.
Is Republicans don't trust Evers with DNR.
Sure.
So does Cole become, I don't want to say a hostage necessarily, but kind of like the person who's held up because of that give and take about DNR policy
right.
going forward?
At the same time, though, Preston Cole, you know, was around on the Natural Resources Board under Governor Walker, got Governor Walker's stamp of approval after mm-hmm. he was put in. So if you take him away, what do you get in return if you're a Republican?
Fascinating. Very good point. And that's what I've heard about all these folks. If Republicans were to reject one, who do they think would replace? Somebody more moderate?
Right.
Probably not. I just want to hit real quick. We have heard for years in the Capitol about local government saying we're not being funded properly. The latest example, Milwaukee officials wanting a local 1% local sales tax. They say it'd be used for property tax relief and common priorities such as investing in infrastructure, municipal facilities. It would raise an estimated $160 million in the first year. The question I have, do you think it's going to pass?
well,
pass legislature because
pass
it's
the legislature,
there first.
Right. Doesn't seem likely. This is not something based on past precedent from Republicans in the legislature that would get their approval for a number of reasons. One, it raises taxes, mm-hmm. but two, bringing more power to the Milwaukee County government is usually not the path that Republicans in the legislature have taken.
There is a joke that Republicans in the Capitol like local control, as long as they control the locals, and I just don't get the impression that this is something that they want to see. They think there's, you know, there's an argument made about efficiency. If they could find efficiencies, mm-hmm. you know, look, and they keep going back to Mayor Barrett and the streetcar of like, look, if you found money for the streetcar,
sure.
why can't you find money for infrastructure? Why can't you find money for police? Why can't you find money for this? It's just a tough sell. And that's actually what Robin Voss, the spokeswoman, the Assembly Speaker, said that he discussed it with the caucus, but it would be a, quote, a tough sell for many of his colleagues. So
sell is often a no. or heavy good. Lift. That's a good one,
heavy
too.
Heavy lift.
Yeah.
Very good. So let's move to our stock report with Policy.com this week. First, this is not an uplifting, rising, but suicide rates. We got a report from DHS, Department of Health Services. Between 2000 and 2017, suicide rates are up 40%. A couple of tidbits from the report. Rates were highest for people ages 45 to 54, which I am now part of. Mm-hmm. Between 13 and 17, the last year information was available for, also found that suicide was the second leading cause of death for adolescents in 2017. What do lawmakers do to address this issue? What are you watching for?
Well, I mean, we're seeing definitely a conversation about mental health programming and increasing funding to that, trying to get more access to therapy and treatment for people who need it. That's something that's got pretty bipartisan consensus. I think you're also going to hear more of an argument from Democrats that this means that tighter gun restrictions ought to be in place, particularly the so-called red flag law, which would allow law enforcement to step in. And if someone's believed to be a danger to themselves or others, not allow them to have firearms. I think this will probably bolster that argument for Democrats.
Okay. So, Mix, I want to go back to Matt Walker a little bit because he fascinates me. On the one hand, his dad, you know, and I'm a geek about KMA Finance Reports, his dad has the single best Democrat of any Wisconsin state politician I've ever seen. Now, Tammy Baldwin, federal, probably sure. the best one, but state candidate, best one I've seen. He could tap into that. He can make the generational change argument. He could tap into his dad's network of supporters. But does that also make it seem like nepotism, where you've got your dad plowing ground for you? Now, you know, Matt Newman, again, has another dad issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Matt Newman's worked in the private sector with the family home building business. He's built a reputation somewhat through that business, which, you know, doesn't hurt. Plus, two, don't forget his dad had connections to Club for Growth, which plays in GOP primaries, doesn't really mind about, you know, irritating certain Republican factions.
Mm-hmm.
They played heavily for Mark Newman and his old campaign, so might they come back and do that again for his kid? Something to watch for. But Matt Walker fascinates me a little bit because can he be his own man, like mm-hmm. his own candidate, and shed the Governor Walker's son label to be his own candidate, or for congressional seats, first time out, or does he go, okay, me versus Scott Freeland on a debate stage is a tough sell, but me running for state assembly, that might be a good way to get into politics. But it's clear between him looking at running, his brother working for Leah Vukmir's campaign last year, the boys are in the family business.
Definitely.
And just real quick, our falling another downer for this week, sorry. But test scores. DPI releases numbers showing that 4 in 10 Wisconsin students were proficient or advanced in math. Just 4 in 10. And in math and English, ACT scores dropped for 11th graders on average statewide. Now, everything is politics in this business. The first thing I heard from Republicans was, well, who's been running education policy the last, you know, dozen years in Wisconsin? Tony Evers. Mm-hmm. Does any of this blame rest on Evers? Conversely, DPI says we need more resources for kids who face more challenges every year with mental health and those kinds of issues. And do Republicans then share some blame because of how they funded schools the last 8 years?
I mean, I think this came up on the campaign trail a little bit with Evers because, you know, scores and there are still issues. There's still, you know, achievement gap issues, disparity issues. It's not like, you know, this is news to us that the test scores aren't great. And I think, you know, the answer that he gave then was, yeah, we did the best with what we had, but we weren't getting the resources that we needed from the state. So you're definitely going to have that continuing blame game because Republicans will say DPI was failing under Evers and Evers will say, you didn't give me the resources I needed.
And one more note, the achievement gap closed, but not because of good things, because white kids did better. Like, this is, and that, it's just, I mean, I know we're laughing a little bit, but it's just it's like, it's just
super
not.
Super depressing.
Yes, it's a depressing stock report. I apologize for that. I'll try and be better next week with Steve. Ugh. Speaking of that, so programming notes, Steve will be back next week. We have 3 newsmakers next week. Watch those. PSC Chairwoman Balk, DACAP Secretary Foth, and we also have Attorney General Josh Call, newsmaker, also next week, State of Education. Watch for that speech. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse O'Poyan.
That's where we're on September 13th. Have a great weekend.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.